Welcome to the Confessions Podcast. I'm Cindy Wagman.
And I'm Jess Campbell. We're two former in-house nonprofit pros turned coaches and consultants to purpose-driven organizations.
After years of building up our separate six-figure businesses from scratch, we've thrown a lot of spaghetti at the wall and have lived to see what sticks.
We're on a mission to help other nonprofit coaches and consultants looking to start or scale their own businesses past the six-figure mark by pulling back the curtain.
Whether you're still working inside a nonprofit and thinking of one day going out on your own, or you've been running your consulting business for years, you understand that working with nonprofits is just different. We're giving you access to the business leaders who serve nonprofits as their clients. You know, the people who truly get it.
No more gatekeeping, no more secrets. This podcast is going to give you an inside look at what running a successful nonprofit coaching and consulting business looks like. Basically, we're asking people how much money they make, how they get paid, and what has and hasn't worked in their businesses.
Listen in as these leaders share their insights, their numbers, and the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to building a nonprofit coaching or consulting business. We're going to empower you to make the power moves that give you the income and freedom you set out to create from day one.
You ready? Let's go.
Hi, Cindy.
Hey, Jess.
We're back for another recording. We're back. We're forward. I can feel like the loopiness.
I was just going to say, I feel like everyone's super loopy right now. We're in busy time.
It's a busy time. We're towards the tail end of the week. And we are talking today for my first time to Luz Reina of Reina Consulting Group. Yep. And I'm excited. Sometimes I get really excited when we have a guest that I haven't met yet, because I get to ask questions with like fresh eyes, fresh ears. And as we were talking off screen, we were just saying how some people might perceive the back end of your business questions boring. And I was sitting there thinking, I must be nosy or something, because I find this stuff so interesting. Like, give me a recap. Give me a behind the scenes. I am the most interested party. So welcome to the show, Luz. Tell the fine people who you are and how you get paid.
I love that question. How do you get paid? I feel that's one of the biggest questions that, you know, I did, at least at first, I felt like talking about money was so taboo. But the more time passes, I realized that is that what actually helps us as, you know, women leaders, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, to really learn how to charge our worth and know our worth. Right. So thank you, Cindy and Jess, for inviting me to be part of this podcast. My name is Luz Reina. I'm the founder and consultant of Reina Consulting Group. And so we are a strategic and fractional management services firm. I like to say we're a social impact firm, right? Because we prioritize working with folks who have a societal or environmental purpose. And so we work with businesses and nonprofits, culture and community building organizations. I'm based here on the West Coast, but I work with people from across the country. So that's just what brings me joy. And actually, I will be celebrating my 3-year anniversary shortly. So I'm really excited about that and so grateful. And yeah, I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. Now, I love me a good fractional. That's everyone knows I love fractional everything. Talk to us about like fractional management in terms of like, what does that look like in terms of the services you provide?
Great question. So yeah, you know, I will give you a little bit about my background, which will help answer that. So I studied politics in school and our poli sci, and I went into working for Congress and worked for elected official. And eventually I was just introduced to like more elected officials or candidates who are running for office. And I was tapped to be a campaign manager, and I had zero experience, but that was the first time that I've kind of learned how to fully embody being kind of in a leadership position while managing other jobs. And so I was like working for this congressional elected, and I was also working on the campaign. And I realized a couple of years later that I'm like, oh, I was doing fractional work, you know? And I feel, and even now more than ever, I'm really thinking, I think it's what it is liberating for people to learn about. It was liberating for me when I finally found the word fractional, because I'm like, oh my God, that's something that I've always loved to do, is like, I am not really a full-time person. I'm like a part-time person, but I wear all the hats. So for me, a fractional leader has been, you know, I've been like a fractional campaign manager for folks who are running for office. I've been a fractional business manager for a tech startup. I've been a fractional, even like executive director. So, you know, I think the reason why I'm drawn to that is because I get to work with people that I love. I get to work with great causes on my own time. It's flexible. And also I'm working with people's budgets, because a lot of times people don't have the full-time budget to say, I want to hire you full-time. And so it's a win-win situation for my business and for them.
Okay, amazing. I love this. And I want to dive a little deeper into like fractional a little bit, not as far as the function, but I think sometimes us consultants know what fractional services are. But I would say that to the external world, it's still kind of like a newer phase, especially on the market. And Cindy will laugh because I have this best friend who's like a branding marketing genius. And she's always like, for all things messaging, like, what does that mean? And I just like see her right now being like, fractional, like, what does that mean? And so I'm just curious if how you combat that. How do you, it strikes me that you probably have to do a little bit of education in your marketing around what fractional services mean. And I'm just curious how you do that in your marketing and messaging to attract people to know that they can hire you and that you do a certain service. Like, how have you gotten over that hump for folks who may or may not know what it means, like that you can hire someone fractionally?
Huge. That's huge, Shas. Yes. And interestingly enough, I have not used fractional in my marketing materials or my website or really when I'm talking with clients. So what I lead with is, what am I providing for you? It's first getting a sense of, hey, what problems are you experiencing in your business or your nonprofit or your campaign? Oh, I hear that. Okay, it's a fundraising. Okay, then well, have you thought about, you know, doing like some Rolodexing and prospect some potential donors in this industry? Oh, okay. And so you kind of, I'm naturally like a problem solver. So, and I get very curious about what problems are you facing right now, just out of natural curiosity. And then people get excited and then they want to say, well, actually, I would love to work with you. What kind of service do you offer? So then I package up a deal and say, well, this is what I can offer. And it's rarely a full-time thing. So that's how it by nature becomes fractional.
Awesome. And I want to talk a little bit about like the business management side of that, because obviously like every client is a little different, but in terms of pricing things, like the way I work with fractional fundraisers is we have very standard pricing and it's very like, it's simple, right? And every client is pretty much the same unless they're an outlier in terms of what they need. So, but that is a very specific way of pricing things. So I would love to hear how you think about both pricing and client load, because fractional work is more hands-on, it is more in-depth, and there's capacity issues as a consultant. So let's talk about those things. Tell me what you think.
Yes. And before I answer that, Jess, to your point, you said, you know, what's the education part that I'm doing? I want to do more education around fractional leadership. I definitely do. And that's strategy for Q2 and Q3 from our social media, is to promote more of that. Because I notice in the rooms that I'm in, when I mention fractional, people's ears perk up and they're like, oh, I want to learn more about that. Either because I myself see myself as a fractional person, or I want to hire a fractional leader. So definitely more education needed around that. And I'm all for it. And it's, you know, I think it would only help more people to talk more about it. And then to answer your question, Cindy, pricing. So pricing has been trial and error for me. You know, I'm trying a lot of strategies. I'm testing things out. I'm not afraid of risk. I'm not afraid to try something new. And so kind of how I've been pricing out my services is based on the things they need. So I get really clear on you know, let's outline every single thing that you are struggling with, and then I will outline things that can provide for you. And then from there, I do kind of an audit of, okay, well, how much time capacity do I have? And how much time can I offer this project? And then I charge on an hourly basis. And so my hourly rate depends who I'm working with. If it's like a nonprofit, I go for like $125. If it's like a tech startup, I go for $200. If it's a campaign, it's like $250. So it depends on like also how big or how small the client's organization is.
Awesome. Have you ever taken a step back and looked at like on average what that works out to be for your clients every month?
In terms of our...
Yeah, or like what your average monthly billing is for organizations of a certain size, or like just looking at the trend of it to see if there's like patterns.
Interesting. You know, I would say, you know, I haven't had a chance to kind of look at the numbers and identify patterns because I think every situation is so unique. I mean, I've lately been very interested in leaning into strategic work. Because I think for that, they can allot a certain amount and say, okay, well, I can pay you $20,000 for the strategic plan. It takes 6 months. And so it's very predictable. But then there's like this other job that, or this other contract that I had was that I was a business manager for 1 year. And I estimated, well, I can spend about, I don't know, 40 hours a month on this. And they paid me an X amount of money for that year. Right. So I think it depends. It depends on who it is, how many hours you have, what industry it is as well.
Maybe if you haven't stepped back to look at like the number of hours, do you have a sense of how long you generally work with a particular client? Like, is it 6 weeks or is it 6 months or is it on an annual basis? Do you know, have you like looked at that? I guess I'm wondering like how you are navigating new business development versus maintaining your clients and like that flow between, you know, and it's delicate, right? I have people all the time talking about they're flooded with requests and then it's like the Sahara Desert and then they're flooded with requests. And it's like, it's really tricky. So I'm just wondering how you account for that.
100%. My packages, or at least my services, have ranged between 3, 6, or 12 months. And I like to be very specific on my scope because then it helps me think, okay, well, 2-3 months before the end of this project, I need to start doing business development. But it's not always so clear cut, right? Because then sometimes it's like they want to extend the contract, or it's so busy that I don't even have time to do business development. You know, it's busy until I reach that, you know, the end of the contract. But business development is something that happens really organically for me. That's something I want to be more strategic about, more intentional, is what are my sales goals? What's my outreach goal? What are my projections for every year, every quarter, every month? And then go from there. But it's been so organic, really. And I can share a little bit more about that later.
I'm curious how, if you're comfortable talking to us about it, like how you landed at that $125 an hour, that $200 an hour, like, did you just, that felt good, or like, was there some math that it was involved in that? Or is that actually up from where you started and that's just where you are today? Like, or is that based on what you're kind of seeing the market has a budget for? I find that people just really struggle with pricing, and you were so specific around your hourly rate. And I'm just curious how you landed there.
Yeah. I did research online to see kind of what's, you know, for a business manager job, what's the salary? And then you kind of have to calculate back into like, okay, well, if the salary is $85,000, well, then you have to account for taxes. So take out 30% of that, divide that by 52 weeks, divide that by 7 days, I think is the math. And then you're able to see, well, how much should I be making a day? And if you want to know by hour, then divide it by 8. So then you get to see, like, okay, well, at this business manager job, the average salary is 85, or, you know, calculate what that will look like after taxes into like the hourly rate. And then you have to charge, you know, you have to upcharge a little bit because, one, you have to pay for taxes. Two, there's overhead costs. And three, there you're yeah, you end up working a lot more hours than so you
more than a little bit. More than a little bit, I would say. Like I always if you're doing that kind of math, like at least double and include, double as that. You said, all the costs of like health, the healthcare and benefits and everything like that. Yeah.
Yes, that doubled exactly. So whatever that hourly rate, I try to see, well, can I, okay, so what does it look like if I double it? And then is that something that works within the budget of this client? And so then I do my best to negotiate with them. It's really rare that they negotiate with me though, because I mean, I try to come with as much information as I have about like, hey, this is what I can provide, confident in my ability to do this. I know I'm going to get your results and I know it's quality work. You know, and so that I think at my third year, I'm starting to kind of look at my pricing again and see, you know, do I upcharge a little bit and can my clients still pay for that?
Awesome.
All right, Luce, we're back for another round of rapid fire questions. You ready to play?
Let's do it.
All right. So as someone who plays in the political space a bit with campaign fundraising and all the things, and we are in an election cycle year here in the U.S., a big year. I'm curious, what's your advice for nonprofit consultants to pay attention to as we enter in like the thick of a very noisy election cycle?
As a nonprofit consultant, I would lean into, you know, what are things that are percolating in my local community? What are topics and conversations that people are talking about? And what kind of impact do I want to make? Do I want to have a say in some stuff? Do I want to get involved? Do I want to support or grow my impact with my clients? And I mean, it's a presidential season. So it's going to be the talk of the town, especially as we get closer to November. So I'd say, you know, read up on stuff, read your local, you know, your local school board meeting notes, look at what's happening in the news. Yeah, and get educated who's running. And I think it's good. I think as the folks in this country, especially if you can vote, it's important to learn about these things.
Mm-hmm. So in our interview, you talked about a CEO day that you like to take once a quarter. And it made me think, what's your like favorite treat yourself moment? What do you do to really just celebrate yourself or your work?
That's a great question. I have a list of things that I want to treat myself to. And so when I find something else that I want to add to that list, I'll add it. And I use that as a kind of incentive to finish that week strong or to close that client or whatever it is. But as of lately, it's been trying new restaurants. I'm a huge foodie. And I've been treating myself to, you know, Mediterranean food. I want to try Haitian food. I heard this really great restaurant in Portland. Made it like one of the top restaurants in the country. So I'm like, okay, let's talk. I want to go.
For sure. Yeah. Nice. Okay. Love it. And my last question is, who is a business leader you admire and why?
I love having role models. And when we think business, we think who is like the same things people think, who is the person who's kind of making the most amount of money and things like that. But I think what I lean into most is people who are leading with their values. And that's something that I've appreciated in business owners and entrepreneurs who are out there doing their thing. And I do spend time on social media. So I'll say one person that I follow, and she's kind of turned her hobby into a business, and she's awesome. I love how she shows up on social media, is Monet McMichael. She's like a beauty influencer, but she also has learned to kind of, you know, really position herself in this space where folks are getting like, I guess her, like people who are paying her are looking for more organic engagement. And that's what she has, is organic engagement through social media. So I've been looking into that. I'm like, that might be the future, right? Of how we engage new folks is through authenticity, showing up as you are. Yeah. And, but I also do admire a lot Niña Vaca. She's a Latino entrepreneur from Texas, and she's been in the game for like decades, but I've seen her, one of her talks, and one of the things she's mentioned is to be bold, you know, wear that pink power suit, dye your hair, whatever color you want, but let that be your brand and be bold with it, embrace it with all you got. So I just loved that, kind of that philosophy.
I love it. Cool. Thank you for playing.
Okay. I feel like there's a little thread that I want to tug on a bit. I think they're connected, but I could be wrong. You've mentioned one that like people don't really negotiate in the sense that they don't challenge it in a significant way, right? Like your rates are your rates and they're not hassling you about that. You also said a lot of your businesses come more, I don't think you used the word passively, but that's the only word that's coming to my mind right now. My guess is mostly through referrals. And I think that those two are probably connected in that if people are coming to you through referrals, word of mouth, or those kinds of things, then I definitely believe they're less likely to push on pricing. But tell me what your experience has been. Tell me a little bit about, we'll call it passive marketing, right? Where you're not doing all the like, you know, advertising and things like that. What are you doing and how do you find, or like, how is business coming to you, I guess? And how do you manage that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I do want to speak particularly for folks who are maybe in a 9-to-5 right now, and they're looking to transition into being your own freelancer, your own boss, being a business owner, because that transition for me was like a big question mark. It's like, how do I do that? And of course, there was a lot of fear and self-doubt that came with it. But what I've realized looking back, what has really helped me is building my network as much as I could when I was in my 9-to-5. And so even when I was in college, I would be doing like coffee meetings every week, and I would get to know, I would participate in different networking events, and I was on multiple boards. And that habit I carried with me through my career. So in my 9-to-5, I would also do similar kind of networking, but also my work really spoke for itself as well. So actually when I left my job, and actually I had moved to California, I was living in Oregon, I moved to California, and I was getting calls from people who said, hey, I heard through grapevine that you left your job. Are you looking for something? Do you want to work with us? Or can we consult with you? We would just love to learn, like tap your brain and have you help us with this fundraising campaign. So that's kind of how it happened. It was really by word of mouth, but having established already that network and also that quality of work and also relationships. I was in politics, so the nature of politics is relationships. And so organically it happened really well that when I left my job, people just called me, curious what I was up to next.
Okay, that's really helpful. And I think Cindy and I both agree that like your social capital is super valuable and impressive. But as you just mentioned, like it takes work. And so that's really helpful for what you did at the beginning. I'm curious, 3 years in, like, how do you maintain that social capital?
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. That's a phase I'm in right now is, you know, especially as I'm traveling a little bit more and I want to expand my presence a little bit more, right? And expand my impact. You know, how do you maintain that social capital? And so I'm a huge community builder. And so also by nature of politics, being in the political realm, I love community organizing. I love bringing people together. So when I was in California, I'm currently in Oregon, but I travel back and forth. But when I was living there, I started a group called Latina Business Suite. And I got a group of Latino entrepreneurs together. We would meet once a month in person at different restaurants around the Bay. And then the second meeting would happen virtually. So we'd meet twice a month, and we did that. I think we're coming up on our first anniversary of doing that together. And it's nothing fancy. I'll be really honest and transparent. It's not, I don't have a fancy platform. It's honestly a WhatsApp group. and we coordinate there. I send out polls to see where we're going to meet next. So I do community organizing just for the nature of who I am. I love bringing people together, but also I think it's also a matter of like your brand and how you're putting yourself out there. And that's like the biggest hurdle for me right now, because I had to come to the realization. I'm like, well, I need to pivot from being a consultant to being a business owner. And being a business owner, you have a lot more, you need to have a more public brand and get comfortable with that. And that's something I'm working through right now.
Awesome. And I think that's such a natural inflection point for a lot of people where they're like, okay, this was, you know, I was consulting. It's like a consulting practice almost. And now it's a business. I'd love to hear what you're thinking about, what you're playing with or experimenting with going forward, thinking about that business and the brand that you're building there and how you're going to, or what you want to try in terms of marketing and all of that.
Yes, absolutely. So the brand that I've been dreaming about ever since I could remember, right? I've always been someone who, I'm a girl's girl. Like, I have always been interested in the topics around woman leadership, professional development, breaking the glass ceiling, getting representation in positions of power, not just in government, but, you know, in business, Fortune 500, nonprofit leadership, across the board. So I think my brand would really be grounded on how women leaders are at the forefront of this transformative movement, reshaping the way that we approach leadership and business. And I think we're forging a path that integrates more holistic values into our professional journeys. We're embracing self and community care, we're embracing wellness, we're embracing social and environmental consciousness, and also heart-centered leadership. And so those are topics that I'm seeing that are emerging. And when people think business, they're like, oh, well, there's so many misconceptions about what that means, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I think people are kind of becoming more conscious of, I want to do my job, I don't want to be consulting, eventually business owner, but does my identity sit well with me? And the truth is that it's about redefining kind of what leadership looks like and what that means to you. So my brand, I'm looking to build something like that. I'm still not sure if it's on social media, if it's video format, if it's a newsletter. So we're still figuring that out.
I know you said you're just still figuring it out, but I'm like, what is your heart telling you is the one and why?
You know, that's a really good question. I think I have to dig deep or have to kind of peel away kind of these layers of self-doubt that I've had around kind of being more public. And I've been resisting it for some time, I'll be honest with you. But I know my heart is in wanting to serve and wanting to give back. And I just feel like I hold so much knowledge that I'm ready to share with the world. I love writing, but I also love FaceTime with people. And I feel like when people hear my story and they see me, who I am, they will be able to connect with me and I will be able to connect with them. And so, yeah.
Okay. I'd love to dive into just like getting visible and like getting comfortable with getting visible just a bit, because you are not the first consultant I have talked to or listened to who that doesn't come either naturally to, or for a lot of like reasons, they're just makes them uncomfortable or whatever the thing is. And so I'm kind of curious, like, what's in your toolbox for overcoming things or challenges like that find themselves knocking against your door, right? Like, someone smarter than me said once that like all of your deepest insecurities are revealed when you become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And all of like all the self-talk, right? Like all the things, it's just like right in front of your face when you are an entrepreneur. And so I'm just curious, as someone who's been doing this for 3 years, you've probably had various levels of challenges and, you know, fears along the way. Like, where do you go? Who do you learn from? What practices do you do to work through and then come out on the other side?
I think that's so important, because once you become an entrepreneur, you realize like you're not really representing anyone but yourself. And then that's when you realize there's a mirror that you hold up to yourself and you're like, who am I? What do I represent in this world? And what do I want my impact to be? And so I'm still learning, but I did take the first couple of years to really be intentional and just dig really deep about what has been a through line in my career. What have I always been drawn to? And what's my personal story, my lived experience, and how does that show up in my work? So, you know, what's in my toolbox for overcoming these challenges of trying to figure out who I am, trying to figure out how I show up in my business. Also realizing that I'm a human being and I'm growing every single day. I'm learning so much. And if my business were to change with me, that's not going to be good for the business. So how am I planning ahead to say, okay, this is what I want my business to do, but also give myself enough grace and space to grow as a human being? That's a lot to hold. And so I'm very introspective by nature, and I love spending alone time. I don't get enough of it. I don't get a lot of it, but I will cherish the time that I have for myself. And if I even have to book a weekend at a hotel in my hometown, like, I will do that. If I can get away to the beach for a day or two, I will do that. I try to hold like quarterly meetings with myself. I would call them like self retreats, where I dig deep into that. And I write a lot. I journal a lot. And I like to tune in and just make time for that pause to really see what my intuition is telling me, where I need to lean into.
Okay. I love all that. And especially this idea of like understanding the time and space that you need. I'd love to hear what else you do. Like, I think a quarterly mini retreat with yourself is fantastic. How do you balance these things, like working on your business, right? Like giving yourself the time and space, and also just working on all the other day-to-day ins and outs of running a business as opposed to just the practice with actually doing client work?
That is a phenomenal question. And it's a big learning curve for people who first entered the space as a consultant, right? As a freelancer, as a contractor, because at least that was for me. You know, I didn't go in thinking I'm going to build my firm. I went in thinking I'm going to look for some client work. And that pivoted for me when I realized if I don't work, I don't get paid. And that was a realization that I'm like, oh, okay. So I have to set up systems here that I can still bring in clients and manage those clients, but I'm able to take some time away from myself and know that the business is going to be okay. So what does that look like? It means that you're building operations, that you're building marketing, and you're building infrastructure for a business that's beyond you. That starts with, how am I intentionally planning to make my first hire? I think that once you're able to cross into that, then like the conversation changes from being a consultant to being a business owner. And I'm currently experiencing, I'm in that fuzzy phase right now where I'm pivoting away from being a consultant because I realized I only have so many hours in the day. And now I'm leaning into, well, how do I grow something that could be impactful, where I can provide jobs for people, I can provide training for people, and really maximize my impact with my clients.
Awesome. Oh, I'm so excited to watch what's next. And as you grow too, it feels like 3 years is kind of this magic number that I think a lot of people get comfortable enough knowing that like there's work and it's consistent. And then you can start to be a little more risky or playful, I think, in the decisions you make. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Everyone's favorite question is for a confession. Will you share with us a confession about your business or you as a business owner?
You mentioned something about the cycle of consultants, and I've seen also things about this on social media where there's like feast and I can't remember, there's like a time of abundance and a time of slowness and time of abundance and time of slowness. And so it's real, right? And I can say I've been in business for 3 years, which is true, but there's been periods of slowness. And at first I would see that as a reflection of I'm not doing enough. I would kind of doubt my skills. I would be like, am I even a good business owner? What am I doing with my life? Should I look for 9-to-5 jobs? But, you know, I guess a confession would be that, you know, there's been months where it's been tough, and I'll just be very honest about that. And you sometimes wonder, okay, how am I going to pay for stuff that I need to pay for? But I remembered that that's the risk I signed up for. And what I realize is when you take that leap of faith and you know, like, okay, I'm gonna trust this process, I'm gonna trust this path that I'm on, things just naturally unfold for you and they turn out all right. So that would be my confession is, you know, I definitely had a month or two in my career, in my business journey where, yeah, to have business was slow. And either clients weren't paying on time, or I was wrapping up a bunch of client work, or, you know, yeah, it was just violent. And so I learned from those experiences that you got to start closing ahead of time. And yeah, so that's my confession. And we're not balling all the time, y'all. If you're wondering, I'm going to start a business, I'm going to be rich. You can be, but it's all a matter of like, how are you planning for that? How are you being intentional about it? I realized, like, as a consultant, I was mostly looking for client work, but I'm not thinking about growing my business. So I'm thinking, like, well, pivoting into that might, will change things? Question mark. So that's the next journey for me in discovering that.
So awesome. Good. Luz, tell us where people can connect with you and find you and make friends with you or join your group.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. I have my Instagram, which is by Luz Reyna. So BYLUZREYNA. You can find me also on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. And you can find me just by my name, Luz Reyna. And then if you want to connect with me, yeah, you can shoot me a DM, connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you want to, if you're in the Bay Area, you want to join my group, like in the business suite, yeah, just send me a message. I'll add you on there. But yeah, I do have a couple of things that I'm going to be launching here in the next couple of weeks. So I'd love for folks to stay tuned.
Very exciting. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for listening to the Confessions Podcast for nonprofit coaches and consultants. If you enjoyed today's episode, which I sure hope you did, you can show your support in one of three ways.
Number one, post a screenshot of this episode to your Instagram stories or LinkedIn profile and tag Cindy and I so we can repost you.
Number two, share this podcast with a fellow nonprofit coach or consultant.
And number three, leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts so we can continue to grow and reach new listeners.
And of course, make sure you subscribe so you can get the latest and greatest interviews as they drop every Thursday.
And to our fellow nonprofit coaching and consulting friends, remember, we're an open book and here to answer your burning biz questions.
See you next time.